Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, August 11th, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend, and got a lot to talk about on today's show. A non-GCW weekend, but a lot of independent wrestling to cover, so great show lined up for y'all this week. I actually just got finished up with Rev Pro, so I'm going to give you some fresh thoughts on the results for that show, as well as some of the bigger stories coming out of that show involving major AEW talent, and also some recently released WWE talent and stuff like that. So a lot of big news kind of coming out of that Rev Pro show. So I'm going to mainly talk about my thoughts on that when we get there, but Rev Pro just ended like right before I started recording this show. So wanted to wait until that was done so I can get it on the lineup here today. And yeah, I hope you all are having a great Sunday. I know I've had a great weekend, watched a lot of football this weekend now that preseason NFL is back. My Minnesota Vikings got a win yesterday. You know, wins in the preseason don't really mean anything at all. But it was great to see J.J. McCarthy out there on the field. I'm not going to bore y'all with football talk right now on this show. This isn't the platform for that, but as a Vikings fan, a lifelong, diehard Minnesota Vikings fan, I am very, very, very optimistic about the future of the franchise with J.J. McCarthy as the quarterback. It'll probably be Sam Darnold at the beginning of the season, most likely, unless J.J. just balls out to, you know, a point where they just undeniably just have to play him right away. Either way, good problem to have if you're the Vikings and if you're a Vikings fan. So I watched a lot of football this weekend and, of course, watching a lot of wrestling as well. So let's go to the topics and jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for MLW Never Say Never, SLA, that's St. Louis Anarchy, Circus Maximus X9. Got results for Rev Pro Summer Sizzler, as I mentioned. That show just ended, so I got some fresh thoughts on the big news coming out of that show with a lot of major names involved. Also got results for Glory Pro Ascend, Episode 46, NXT Level Up, NWA Power, OTT, that's over-the-top wrestling. They had two shows and some really big news as far as some major names coming in soon for that company as well. And then we got some spoilers for Ring of Honor. So I'm going to end the show with spoilers for ROH. I will make sure to give you all a heads up and put a description or a timestamp in the description if you want to remain spoiler-free. But that'll be at the end of the show today if you want your Ring of Honor spoilers. So without any further ado, let's jump right into the first set of results. We're going to start today with MLW. This is Major League Wrestling. This show is Never Say Never. It aired yesterday on YouTube, on the Major League Wrestling YouTube channel. And this was from St. Petersburg, Florida in the Coliseum. These are the results. We had a dark match where Gigi Rae defeated Gianna Gage. That obviously I didn't see, so I don't know exactly what happened there. But Gigi Rae gets the win in the dark match. As far as when the actual show started, we had a non-title Opera Cup first-round match. Non-title because Mystico, who is the middleweight champion, he defeated Magnus to advance in the Opera Cup tournament. The finish here was La Mystica for the tap-out win. Mystico gets the win over Magnus, once again non-title. And we had another non-title Opera Cup first-round match where Bad Dude Tito, who is the openweight champion, who had Jesus Rodriguez in his corner, he defeats Danny Jones. The finish of this one was the, it was a reversal of Danny Jones like going for a suplex, but before he could even lift Tito up, Tito lifted him up himself, and he puts him right up in the tequila screwdriver, his version of the Steiner screwdriver, gets him with the pin, 1-2-3. So we had both the middleweight champion and the national openweight champion advance in the tournament. After that, we had BRG, Brett Ryan Goslin, defeat Jake Crist. The finish here was BRG doing an eye poke to the eye of Jake Crist, and then capitalizing on that, hitting Key to Victory, which I always call, it's like that moss-covered, or like three-handled moss-covered Family Credenzel, whatever Perry Saturn used to call that move. It's like the swinging Fisherman Buster type move. But good stuff there. BRG gets the win in quick fashion over Jake Crist. After that, we had AJ Francis over Davey Boy Smith Jr., who had St. Laurent in their corner. The finish of this one was basically Davey Boy Jr. has AJ Francis in a sleeper hold, and he won't let go of it. And AJ is like, he's choked out. So like Davey basically like thinks that he's winning by submission, like he's choked him out and he's gonna get the win, and AJ falls like into the middle rope and because they're in the ropes, the referee is trying to break them up, and because they're in the ropes, it causes a disqualification. So AJ Francis ultimately winds up winning by DQ because Davey Boy does not release the chokehold. After that, we had Dummy Exo with Cesar Duran in their corner over Rene Michel. The finish of this one was the Dummy Driver, her version of the Package Power Driver for the 1-2-3. After that, we had another Opera Cup first round match where, you know, long time associates and allies with one another. We had Alex Kane with Faye Jackson in his corner defeating Mr. Thomas, who also had Faye Jackson in his corner as well. So, you know, this a lot of torn emotions and feelings in this one based on the history between the two. Wish this match would have went longer, if I'm being honest. I wish a lot of the matches went longer. I get why they didn't. They wanted to put a lot on this card so they can get through a lot of the opening of the Opera Cup tournament. I totally understand that, but just personally speaking, especially with matches that have the kind of history you have between someone like Thomas and Kane, and then that's not to say other matches. I mean, I could have, you know, used more in some. I mean, BRG versus Jay Chris was a quick match. Bad Dude Tito's matches are generally pretty fast. You know, Delmi, I like to see her out there longer, you know what I mean? So there's other stuff that went kind of long, which I'm about to get to, so I think it's kind of justified in what I'm talking about if you watch this show. That's my only critique of the show at all, is just that some of these matches I felt were a little rushed and could have been a little bit longer. That's my own personal opinion. But nonetheless, we had Alex Kane over Mr. Thomas to advance in the Opera Cup. The finish here was it was like an exploder suplex followed up by, I always call it the crash landing, because I remember Jason Jett used to do the crash landing in WCW after he was Easy Money in ECW. But it's like that release suplex, release vertical suplex bomb, I guess technically, also known as an X-plex. People might call it that as well. There's various names for it. I think y'all know the move I'm talking about. Anyways, Alex Kane does one of those and follows up with a spear for the 1-2-3. I'll also say, as an Alex Kane fan, I prefer if he kept his finisher as like a suplex. I really like the Mark of Kane. I think it's a unique suplex that nobody really uses that was unique to him. And I like that more as a finisher personally. But I mean, he uses various moves, sleeper holds and various suplexes. So I do like that about his arsenal and his attack. Like, I'm a big Alex Kane fan. That's the only reason I'm bringing this up. The only reason I'm saying it is because there's so many people who use spears as finishers, right? And I just feel like the suplexes and the submission holds just fit Alex Kane better. That's just a personal opinion. But like I said, huge fan of his. You can do whatever he wants. I just, you know, I would prefer if he stuck more to the suplex finisher than the spear. Maybe the spear is more like a setup, but once again, so many people use the spear, you know what I mean? After that, we had the MMA cage match. This match went pretty long, and that's kind of where I'm also getting at, is this match was like 15 or so minutes long, and then some of these other matches I'm talking about were, you know, around 5-6 minutes and less. We had Paul Walter Hauser defeating Filthy Tom Lawler in an MMA cage match. The finish of this was actually pretty great. I mean, for what this was, they pulled it off pretty well. It's just, you know, this is what it is, obviously. And the finish of the match was Filthy Tom trying to use nunchucks on Hauser. And he, like, nunchucks himself in the face. And based on, like, kind of hitting himself in the head with the nunchucks, that's the opening that Hauser needs, because Hauser was like dead to rights in the ring. He was getting destroyed, or in the cage, I should say. And Paul Walter Hauser puts him in like a hammerlock flatliner, like hits him with like a hammerlock flatliner type move, and then pins him in the middle of the ring, in the middle of the cage. I keep saying ring. 1-2-3. So also, not only was this in an MMA cage, Paul Walter Hauser won by pinfall. So anyway, moving on, we had the main event of the show, which was Contra Unit, the team of Kwan, Mads Kruger, a.k.a. Cruel, and Minoru Suzuki, with Jinai Kai on the outside. They defeat Akira, Matt Riddle, and Satoshi Kojima. The finish of this one, the best way I can describe is basically Kojima has been like put through a door in the corner, and Cruel is about to hit Kojima with a chair. And as Cruel is like loading it up and he's about to swing at Kojima, Akira takes the bullet for Kojima and Krul whacks Akira in the head with his chair and then pins him for the 1-2-3. So Krul pins Akira to get the win for Contra Unit, and they cover Akira with the flag and everything after the match. And I'll go ahead and announce right now, as long as nothing changes, you know, things are always card subject to change, you know, just like in wrestling. Same with any interviews or anything, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But the plan for this week, for the Spotlight interview, is to get Krul on the show. So I'm very interested to speak to Krul. That interview has been a long time coming. I've been a fan of his for years through various names and different lives that man has had in the wrestling world. I'm very interested to talk to him, so it should be a great interview. If all goes as planned, y'all should be hearing Krul on the Spotlight this Thursday. And then the plan for the following week, just to give y'all kind of a sneak peek, is a guy named Cam Nuggets, or called Cam Nuggets, I should say. His real name isn't Cam Nuggets, but he's like a YouTube drama commentary channel. He's been covering a lot of the big scandals going on with some of the major YouTube channels and stuff, and he's a big pro wrestling fan, so we're going to talk some pro wrestling in a couple weeks. So that's the plan for the next couple weeks for the Spotlight. And then the next Thursday after that, which will be Thursday the 29th, I'm taking off work from my shoot job that day. So the plan is for me and Jeremy to have somebody on live with us, and I haven't decided who to invite yet, but we'll probably have some sort of live guest or something that Thursday. So if you enjoy this, you enjoy anything that I do, or you want more of my content, or, you know, my interviews with wrestlers and promoters and YouTubers and that kind of stuff, that's over on the Spotlight on Fightful. That's every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. That's myself and Jeremy Lambert. So please check that show out if you haven't. And as always, thanks for listening to the Weekender right here on FightfulSelect.com. So that was Major League Wrestling, Never Say Never. And that show, like I said, is completely free over the MLW YouTube channel. You know, it's none of my business what goes on between, you know, on the business side of these promoters and the streaming networks. And I don't want to get in the middle of it or even speculate on anything. But I just want to say, as a fan, it's very cool that I get to see companies like MLW completely for free on YouTube. I think it should be something that y'all are... y'all don't take for granted as well. You know what I mean? Like, I love these other streaming platforms, right? I love IWTV. They've been endorsing me for years. I love Fight Plus. I think that they have collectively some of the best programming, you know, you can get for, you know, $8 a month or whatever. I mean, GCW alone, I think, is worth that. I'm not even endorsed to tell y'all that each week, you know? I really believe in these streaming services, and I believe in these companies that do it themselves too, off of their own websites. Like, you know, Rev Pro has their own website that they stream off of, which we'll be talking about here shortly. Stuff like that. So, you know, there's nothing against any of the streaming sites, obviously. But as a fan, it's also really cool that I can just pop on YouTube and just go right over to the MLW YouTube channel, watch a completely free, you know, PLE-level show. Then if I want to, without even changing platforms, completely for free, go over to Glory Pro's YouTube channel, you know, watch their show. It's a half hour long, an hour long, whatever, and then... You know, it's great that we have so many options as wrestling fans, is really what I'm getting at, including the option of watching independentwrestling.tv, as I just mentioned. Use code FIGHTTALK, and you can go check out the next show I'm going to talk about, which is St. Louis Anarchy's Circus Maximus X9. This show took place on July 26th. It was just recently uploaded to IWTV. It was from Spalding Hall in Alton, Illinois. Alton, Illinois is basically St. Louis, Missouri. It's like right there on the border. I've talked about many times how I've traveled from Nashville when I lived there, you know, making 10-hour round-trip drives from Nashville to and back to that Alton, Illinois, St. Louis area, because I used to go to Glory Pro shows years ago, and, you know, that's a company that means a lot to me, and SLA has been a company that, you know, has been right there with them. Two of the best companies, in my opinion, that you can find in that area. And we have St. Louis Anarchy's Circus Maximus X9 right here. Here are the results. Once again, available on IWTV, independentwrestling.tv. Use code FIGHTTALK. Show started off with Gary J over Dingo. Gary J gets the win with a roaring elbow for the 1-2-3. After the match, Dingo leaves his boots in the ring and announces his retirement and gets a great ovation from the fans, a lot of respect there. He's been around a long time, means a lot to that area especially, so cool to see Gary J get that win, and then Dingo leave the boots in the ring in his retirement. After that, we had Casey Carrington over Billy McNeil. The finish of this one was, I don't know the name of the move, but it's like a flipping neck breaker for the 1-2-3. I've seen the move before. It's been a long time, though, and I can't put my finger on like the last time I've seen someone do it, but it's like a it's basically like a swinging neck breaker, but you do like a barrel roll with it. After that, we had Matt Fitchett over Lainey Luck. The finish here, I really like the sequence here. So Matt Fitchett does a code breaker and then immediately locks on a triangle choke from the bottom and forces Lainey to tap out. I really like the transition there of code breaker, and since he's already in that position, just switching his legs up right into that triangle choke. So really nice stuff there from Matt Fitchett. Matt Fitchett, somebody, you know, speaking of my trips to Glory Pro years ago, Matt Fitchett and Davey Vega, who we're going to talk about in just a second, who was also on the show, you know, they were one of my favorite tag teams, the best season in the world. So, you know, I'm always keeping an eye on what Fitchett and Vega are up to. After that, we had Raheem De La Suede over Victor Analog. The finish of this one was a reversal of a suplex into a small package, and Raheem De La Suede gets the pinfall victory. After that, we had a Texas Bull Rope match where one called Manders defeated Mad Dog Connolly by referee decision. Mad Dog has been building a very strong reputation lately, especially when it comes to these types of matches. Bull Rope matches, you know, dog collar matches. He had a great dog collar match at Action Dean over WrestleMania weekend that y'all should all definitely check out. He got a big spot in the SCI tournament, a very coveted, you know, tournament out of the Chattanooga, Tennessee area every year that, you know, we talk about extensively here and on every platform that I'm involved with. I'm always talking about the SCI tourney. You know, Mad Dog got a spot in that basically based off of, you know, the recent work, but especially, you know, these types of matches and the reputation he's been getting. So big shout out to Mad Dog for what he's been doing lately. Even though he's been getting a lot of L's in these situations, a lot of losses in some of these bigger matches, he's still coming away gaining more and more fans. And then once he starts getting big wins, people are going to be there for it. You know what I mean? That's all, you know, nothing against Manders, of course. Y'all know how I feel about one called Manders. One of my favorite guys in wrestling. Like, as like a human being, I think he's a great dude. I've been watching him grind for years as well, and I've said it 1,000 times, you know, I don't want to necessarily compare him to anyone else on the indie scene because I know so many people put in so many miles, but he's probably the first one that comes to mind if someone were to be like, hey, who do you know of right now that's like doing the most driving, the most flying, just the most actual traveling and wrestling that you can think of? And honestly, Manders is probably the first name to come to mind right now for me. Once again, nothing against anyone else. There's plenty of names that come to mind, but he's one that comes immediately to mind because he works for so many different companies in so many different states, and then he goes and flies to Japan for GCW, you know what I mean? And then he'll pop up in MLW, and then he'll pop up on an indie, then he'll pop up on another indie, then he'll pop back up on MLW, then he goes to it, you know, he's just all over the place, you know what I mean? And he's having really good matches. That said, Manders gets the win over Mad Dog Connolly in this Bull Rope match. The finish here was Manders pulling Mad Dog towards him with that rope and hitting a lariat. Mad Dog kicks out at 2, and then Manders immediately wraps the rope around Mad Dog's neck, chokes him out, the ref stops it, and it's a technical submission by referee's decision. Manders gets the W. After that, we had an 8-person tag team match where Sean Orleans, Shaza McKenzie, and the New Guys, a team of Jake Bosch and Scott Stanley, they defeat Ashlyn Alexander and the Rowdy Rough Boys, which is Adrian Surge, Nick King, and Tommy Davis. The finish of this one, I'll do my best to explain. Basically, Nick King has been kind of at odds with the Rowdy Rough Boys, and he prevents Adrian Surge from using a steel chair. And because of this miscommunication, it allows the opportunity for Shaza McKenzie to do a schoolboy roll-up and pin Adrian Surge. So after the match, we kind of, they tease some different kind of stories and stuff afterwards where like it looks like Surge is kind of on his own and wanting to turn on Nick King, but ultimately the Rowdy Rough Boys, everybody involved, they all turn on Nick King and beat him down after the match. After that, we had Ken Broadway over Chase Holiday. The finish of this one was a high knee. Well, like Chase Holiday was going for like a rebound lariat, and Broadway countered with a really nice high knee to the face, and then follows up with ground and pound, like some hammer fists on the ground, and the referee jumps in and stops it. So Broadway gets the win over Chase. After that, we had Jake Parnell over Anakin Murphy. I cannot do this match justice. This is one, like, I always recommend y'all check all the shows out that I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Support all the talent, buy their merch, you know, do your part. You know, if you like this kind of stuff, I do my best to try to buy t-shirts and promote and, you know, do the best that I can to help out how I can. You know what I mean? And I don't want to prioritize one match, one person, talent, anything over the other, but this is a match that, like, if you can't watch anything else on this show, I would highly recommend checking out Jake Parnell versus Anakin Murphy for various reasons. One, it's a wild match. Two, Anakin Murphy has been one of these next up guys from the Chattanooga area that's starting to break out, and I think you're just going to be seeing more and more of them and just kind of get familiar now, because they're willing to go out there and really put it on the line, and I thought this was a really damn good match. I also recommend checking out because of the storylines that I can't go into super depth detail because it takes too long to explain everything going on, but like, you had a lot of interference in this match as well, including Victor Analog and Mad Dog Connolly, like, playing a hand in the finish of the match, basically passing Anakin's body over to Jake so that Jake can lock in his, I always forget what he calls it, the key lock, what's he called? If he heard this, he would kill me for not knowing the name of this move still. It's like a variation of a sleeper hold, but it's like a, with like a, an arm through. Oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of the submission off the top of my head for some reason, and it always escapes me. Anyways, Jake gets the win by submission, chokes out Anakin Murphy, and this match was a banger. Like, there was skewers in Jake Parnell's head at one point when he hit a lariat. It was good stuff. The rest of the show, I don't even want to single this out because the rest of the show is really damn good too. Like, these next two matches were so good and big title changes. So after that, you have the destination title match where Aaron Williams defeated Davey Vega, who I just mentioned, a former bestie in the world. Aaron Williams gets the win in that one after hitting a ripcord right high kick to the head, followed up by, I wrote down a figure four pile driver because I don't know how else to describe it. Basically, Aaron Williams picks up Davey Vega in a pile driver position and then crosses Davey's legs while he's hanging upside down and then just drops just head first into the ground. Really, really nice finish. Looked brutal. And Aaron Williams gets the win there. That's a big win for him. And he's a dude, another guy who's just been grinding for so long. So it's good to see a lot of these guys. It feels like right now, and I know this happens in cycles, you know, but right now it just feels like I'm seeing a lot of people getting their flowers. And it's just really nice to see, you know, and that includes the next match, the Gateway Heritage title. We had Thomas Shire defeat Derek Neal. Thomas Shire gets the win after hitting a powerbomb and then just floating it right into a second powerbomb and stacking up Derek for the 1-2-3. I believe Derek Neal was completely undefeated in SLA up to this point. This is like his big 21-1 Undertaker streak type loss. Both these guys, like, Derek Neal has been good for a very long time, and so has Thomas Shire. Like, both these guys, like, in their, especially in, like, the circles that you might come from as a fan, you might have known about both of these guys for a very long time, but there's so much talent in the ring between those guys, especially for their size. Like, Thomas Shire, and I mean this as, like, the highest compliment because I was a fan of his, he gives me, like, USA, like, Takeshi Morishima vibes in a lot of ways. Like, he's just a big dude. Like, he's just a big human being that can just move and work, and everything he does looks legitimate. And I remember when he came through Nashville and did some shows there, I remember Righteous Jesse was, like, super, super hyped that he got Thomas Shire booked for a sup show. And I remember watching him back then and being like, dude, this guy's incredible. Why do more people not know about this guy? Derek Neal, same type of thing, but basically out of New South. And there was that big campaign a while back, him trying to get on NWA TV, and like they weren't interested. And like, it just seemed like such a miss by them, you know? So I'm a huge fan of both these guys. Oh, this match was great. And it was great to see another guy, Thomas Shire, get his flowers, get that Gateway Heritage Championship. And just a great show from top to bottom. You check it out on IWTV. That is SLA, St. Louis Anarchy, Circus Maximus X9. Moving on, got results for Rev Pro Summer Sizzler 2024. This was today, like right before I started recording. It's over on revproondemand.com, as I was talking about before. Really cool to see companies like Rev Pro that can do this in-house without any other, not even using YouTube, just using their own website, you know what I mean? So this was a big show. All the Rev Pro shows have become pretty much destination viewing, as far as like you got to know what's going on in these shows, because so many people pop up in these, and there are consequences beyond just Rev Pro itself when it comes to a lot of these shows. This was once again today, so this was on August 11th, and this was from London, England, and York Hall. Shout out to the homie Joe Holbert, who was there live in the crowd. So I got a picture with MJF. Very happy. It was heartwarming to see. And that said, we have the results here for Rev Pro Summer Sizzler. I'm going to give you the winners and losers, and I'm going to elaborate on some of the bigger things that happened on this show while it's fresh in my mind. So we had Gideon Gray over Dan McGee, Leon Slater over Jack Cartwheel in a Cruiserweight Scramble qualifying match. We had a Rev Pro Undisputed British Tag Team number one contender match for, you know, the titles. So we had the Sunshine Machine over David Francisco and Golden Boy Santos, Greedy Souls, and the Young Blood. We had Zozia over Ricky Knight Jr. by ref decision. The Rev Pro Undisputed British Women's title was on the line. Danny Luda defends and retains over Nina Samuels, who had a lot of people with her. Alex Windsor, Lizzie Evo, Mercedes Blade, and Sapphire Reed. We had Donovan Dijak over Robbie X, Luke Jacobs over Trevor Lee, and MJF over Michael Oku to defend and retain the AEW American title. So to elaborate a bit on this show for some highlights here, obviously Leon Slater versus Jack Cartwheel, two guys who, like, Leon Slater is going to be a massive star, and I don't know, like, kind of what the holdup is for him not being more utilized on TNA up to this point. He's been signed to them for a while, so, you know, and I haven't looked into it, so I have no idea. And maybe I'm wrong because I don't follow TNA as closely as I probably should. I catch up on it basically in chunks. Like, we do the spoilers here on the show for the Weekender, and then I catch up on stuff before the pay-per-view reviews that I do. So if they have been using Leon Slater more and I just haven't known it, then that's on me. But I feel like there should be more buzz about Leon Slater already at this point. And Jack Cartwheel, another one of my guys who I just think is one of my favorite guys, like, as a human being, just a very warm-hearted soul of a human being. And a fellow member of the Jew crew, along with me, you know, it's good to see him out there repping for the Jewish people, you know, good to see him and MJF out there. We don't have too many of us out there, so, you know, it's always good to see Jack Cartwheel doing his thing. But, yeah, great stuff between those two, obviously. Donovan Dijak cuts a promo after his match that I thought was very interesting. He basically comes out and talks about how, or doesn't come out, he just won a match, but he talks about how, like, he has no issue with Shawn Michaels, and he loves Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels is his friend. And I'm guessing, once again, I haven't been keeping up too much with this, so there's probably context I'm missing here, but I know Dijak's done some recent interviews and stuff, but was there, like, some sort of misconception maybe that Dijak was, like, really disgruntled in the WWE? Because I know that there was some stuff that he had kind of put out there where, I know there was some stuff out there, but I never took anything as, like, he didn't like Shawn Michaels. There's maybe some other people that he didn't get along with great and stuff like that, and I don't want to speculate or, you know, assume anything, but I guess that's kind of where I was coming from. When he started talking specifically about Shawn Michaels in that promo today, I was like, oh, okay, that's, it is interesting because, you know, I figured he had some gripes with the actual WWE system as a whole and maybe some individuals there that he had to deal with. I know he didn't have, like, the best situation being, like, he was in NXT and then he got, like, called up to the main roster and they had no plans for him. Then, like, he was back in NXT and, like, you know, and then I think he was back on the main roster again and just, like, not being used and being put on, like, main event and stuff. I get that he had gripes with the company. I never specifically thought he had anything against Shawn Michaels in particular, you know what I mean? So just thought that was interesting. He talked about him specifically. Also worth mentioning, Trevor Lee on the show, massively over. He's been getting huge pops everywhere he's been showing up since leaving the WWE. He was great on the indies before he ever signed to WWE, but, you know, maybe kind of a blessing in disguise type scenario where if he can just keep killing it on the indie scene right now, he'll be back on you know, major television sometime in the near future, I'd imagine, because the talent's obviously there. And the biggest stuff here is obviously the main event of the show, because we had MJF dressed up basically in Hulk Hogan regalia. I mean, this guy was wearing red and yellow. He quoted Real American in the middle of the ring before the match started. He literally cut a promo. He's talking about he's a real American. He fights for the rights of every man and all that kind of stuff. Michael Oku, there's been a lot of speculation about him joining AEW and him being a part of All In. And I think that there's enough buzz and there's enough smoke that there's fire there, especially with what happened after the match. So I think it's pretty safe to assume that Michael Oku will be a part of All In. And I mean, this was great stuff, obviously, between these two. You know, as far as, you know, the biggest news probably to come out of this show, essentially, so MJF beats Michael Oku. He defends the American title, and he's going to try to Tiger Driver 91 Amira. And before he can do that, Will Ospreay comes out for the save. And Ospreay hasn't been seen in Rev Pro since around the beginning of the year, which I believe was the, I'm almost positive Michael Oku was his last opponent. And like, he hasn't been seen since then because he's been, you know, signed to AEW. So this was huge, and he got a massive pop, and he, you know, he runs off MJF. And Ospreay cuts a promo after on the mic in front of the crowd and basically says he's going to do whatever it takes, including getting that Tiger Driver onto MJF at Wembley. Like, you know, the gloves are off, and if you want MJF to be, or he basically says, like, if you want Ospreay to be, like, nasty, like, I can get nasty too, you know. So this was a huge show as far as, like, implications for AEW and other companies and stuff. So, you know, check it out. This was Rev Pro. You can check it out on RevProOnDemand.com. Summer Sizzler is the show. Moving on, got some more results. This is Glory Pro Wrestling's Ascend Episode 46. Another St. Louis / Alton, Illinois, Missouri area-based companies. I was just talking about how I used to make a lot of trips out to Glory Pro. Love that they put their shows on for free on their YouTube channel, which is exactly where you can find the show I'm about to talk about. This aired, or premiered, whatever you want to call it, on YouTube on August 4th. And these are the results. We had two matches. First match we had was Dan the Dad and Cody Lane over Rohit Raju and Zico. The finish here was Dan the Dad hitting a spine buster on Raju, followed up by Cody Lane hitting a back senton onto a hunched over Raju and pinning him for the 1-2-3. And then the main event of the show, we had the United Glory tag team titles on the line. PME, the team of Philly and Marino, they defeat the new guys, Bosch and Stanley. The finish of this one was Philly does a stack pin and grabs Marino's arms from the outside for the extra leverage and gets the pin to retain the United Glory tag team titles. This was defense number 7 in their current run with the belts and defense number 10 overall between multiple title runs with those belts. But safe to say that PME is the most dominant team in Glory Pro right now. And the new guys, it looks like, especially because, like, after the match, the fans gave them a pretty good ovation. And they even mentioned on commentary that things probably aren't through between the new guys and PME. I could see them maybe ultimately being the ones to take them down, but they'll probably come back to this later on. But really good stuff, especially with how the finish was, you know, the dirty pin finish with, like, the double team in the leverage and everything. So I think it's pretty safe to say there is way more meat on the bone between PME and the new guys. But those are the only two matches available this week on Glory Pro Ascend. But you can check it out. The show is like 37 minutes long, and it's completely free over on the Glory Pro YouTube. Moving on, got results for NXT Level Up. The show took place, or the show, I should say, aired on August 9th, 2024. I watched it on Hulu, so that's where I recommend y'all check it out. And these are the results. We had 3 matches and 2 interview segments. So first match we had was Dante Chen, a.k.a. ChenXT. Dante Chen gets the win over Keanu Carver. The finish of this one was Chen hitting the Chental Touch, which I'll always call the Hadouken for the 1-2-3. I like that they're calling Dante Chen the gatekeeper of NXT because he really does feel like that, especially on Level Up. But like Level Up in a way is a gatekeep in itself to the main NXT show, if that makes sense. So he's like the gatekeeper of the gatekeeper, but I think ChenXT is a real thing. You know, I think that the more that he gets on the actual NXT show, the better. And honestly, you know, people who listen to this show, I think would agree, but maybe the overall WWE fan wouldn't, because let's just be real. Most WWE fans are not paying attention to NXT Level Up, but I really feel like Dante Chen would thrive on either Raw or SmackDown. I know that that's might sound like a stretch, but the guy has a great look. He consistently improves. He does all the basics that they need him to do very well. He's in a tough spot right now as far as like he's like the best consistent NXT Level Up performer as far as like a singles guy. There's other people like, you know, Malik Blade and Idris Enofe and stuff like that. Like, there are a lot of really talented people on Level Up, but Dante Chen, I feel like, as a singles performer, just kind of feels like he really is the gatekeeper of NXT and of NXT Level Up. But, and that's a good spot to be in for a while, but you don't want to get too lost in the mix. And I just feel like with the right story and the right writing, do I think Dante Chen would be like an immediate, you know, title challenger or main event level person or something in the WWE on the main roster? No, I don't think that right away. But I feel like, I think he's got a great look. He's athletic. He does what they need him to do. He's been really, really solid for years in the WWE system, really under the radar. And, you know, maybe he's not ready for Raw or SmackDown at the moment. I don't know. But I just wanted to put it out there that I just feel like, don't be surprised if you see Dante Chen either get a big push in NXT or wind up on the main roster faster than you would expect. I just hope he doesn't get too lost in the mix, because I see a lot of talent there, and I really respect the amount of growth I've seen this guy make over the years. And I think, and honestly, I know this might sound like a weird way to gauge things, but because I'm a collector of, you know, action figures and cards and stuff, the Dante Chen trading cards have started to get a little more sought after. I've noticed that, like, people actually in the chats of these live streams and stuff that are actually getting pretty hyped on, like, trying to get Dante Chen's autograph and stuff. And, you know, maybe that means nothing. I don't know. But I feel like it means something. It means there's some sort of fan demand. He's making some sort of connection with the fans that have been paying attention to him. And I'm one of those fans, man. I'm behind it. I like seeing people like him go from generic move sets, no gimmick, no really anything, just trying to find their way to like finding stuff that seems to work and click, and people now want to buy their merch. You know, that's good stuff. After that, we had a interview segment, the first of a couple. This one was with Lainey Reid. Lainey Reid's basically talking about how Wendy Chu's been acting weird lately, because obviously she's had this big makeover and like gimmick change. Like the nightmare, not like the happy-go-lucky, you know, Wendy Chu just, you know, having a good time, trying to take naps. Now she's like a walking nightmare, right? She's dead inside. But Lainey Reid came really close to winning last week on Level Up, and she basically says she wants to be the sweet southern dream, basically the contrast of Wendy Chu's nightmare. Wants to turn the nightmare into the sweet southern dream, I think was her exact words. So that leads into the next match, which is Wendy Chu defeating Lainey Reid. The finish of this one was Wendy Chu rolling through a seated crossbody attempt and locking in a Cobra Clutch, which I think she just calls the sleeper, but it isn't a sleeper. But that's probably what they should call the move if she doesn't call it that because of the obvious gimmick. But anyways, causes the pass out with a Cobra Clutch and gets the win. After that, we had another interview segment where Kale Dixon is talking about how much it sucked to be out of action And he feels like his next match against Idris Inoue, which is about to be next, he feels like it's a tune-up match. So he's very overconfident heading into this one. Idris Inoue, by the way, defeats Kale Dixon in this match. The finish here was a modified DDT followed up by a top rope elbow drop for the 1-2-3. So once again, I've said it 1,000 times, it's not like a broken record. We're going to talk about NXT Level Up, but if you go in with the right expectations, I think it's a very enjoyable show. And you might have been able to hear it in my voice when I was talking about Dante Chen. And there's people that might hear this and think I'm, you know, it's a big stretch, the kind of stuff I'm talking about, or I'm being unreasonable, or, you know, it just doesn't make sense. But like, that's, I get a lot out of watching the growth of these performers. And it's not just on Level Up, it's on the indie scene especially, right? But the fact that we get to see it on a level like NXT, like on the WWE, you know, shows, like the fact that we get the chance to watch that happen is just pretty cool. So I'm very happy for someone like Dante Chen, who I think is doing very well. Moving on, we have results for NWA Power. This show aired on August 6th, and you can watch it over on the CW app and on their website. First match we had was the Immortals over Dark City Violence Connection. The finish here was Immortality by the Immortals to get the 1-2-3, their version of like the Doomsday Device uppercut. We had a thing for only slams. The next match we had was Colby Carino over Alex Misery. The finish here saw Colby Carino throw Alex Misery off the top of like the entrance stage. And that looked pretty cool, but he couldn't see what Alex landed on, so like it looked pretty brutal. But I mean, since the cameras were set up how they were set up, for all I know he landed on a bunch of pillows and beds. I mean, I have no idea, but that's not to say that I necessarily mind that one way or another. I want these guys to be safe. I don't want these guys actually getting hurt and throwing each other onto the concrete. But we couldn't see the bump, but it's heavily implied that he just almost kills Alex Misery by throwing him off the stage. And then he rolls Misery into the ring, hits him with the L driver, which is similar. I mean, if you watch Colby Carino, I've seen him do this move plenty of times. But if you have been watching, it's similar to like an assault driver for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the NWA JCP Southeastern Tag Team titles on the line, because there's not enough titles already in the NWA. We had the Stu Crew defend and retain over the Miserably Faithful. Finish this one was a German suplex and spinning lariat combination by the Stu Crew to get the 1-2-3 to retain the titles. And the main event of the show, we had Mims with G's in his corner over Zion with Austin Idol in his corner. The finish here, towards the end, G's and Idol are arguing with one another. Due to their history, Idol feels like G's turned on him and the mentor has been betrayed by the student, so on and so forth. As all this is happening, Mims debuts a new finishing move, which is a cross-faced chicken wing. A brand new move none of us have ever seen in the history of wrestling. But, you know, a new move to Mims. I'm being facetious. I like Mims. I don't want to trash Mims. My distaste for the majority of what the NWA does has nothing to do with Mims. There's actually a lot of talent on the NWA I really like, including Kenzie Page, who I talk about all the time. But Mims gets the win with a crossface chicken wing. This is the first time he's used that move. He has a new manager in G's. He has a new finisher in the chicken wing. Gets the tap out victory over Zion to close out NWA Power. And it seems like Mims is in for a big push in NWA, which honestly, based on their current roster, I think that Mims probably should get a pretty big push there. I mean, he's been a loyal soldier to that brand for years at this point, so... Moving on, we have results for OTT. This is Over the Top Wrestling. This show has not aired yet. Neither of these have, but I have all the results right here for y'all right now. So the first set of results was from August 9th from Wolverhampton, West Midlands, England. I hope I said that right. And the arena is The Hangar, but it's spelled H-A-N-G-A-R, Hangar. All right, so we got the results right here, and then there was some big news that came out of these shows, too, that I'll get to at the end. So we had a pre-show match where MJ Grayson defeats Miles Kamen. We had LJ Cleary over James Ellis. Kid Lykos, Speedball Mike Bailey, and Robbie X over Adam Maxted, Big Damo and Amari. That was probably a really good match. It looks like that one was almost 15 minutes long as well. We had a three-way match where Speedball Mike Bailey defeated Kid Lykos and Robbie X. So it looks like the winners of that six-man tag match wrestled in a three-way match, and Speedball won that. And that was probably a damn good three-way, because all three of those guys are super talented. So, like what I'm seeing so far, we had Danhausen over Charles Crawley, Dan Maloney over Connor Mills, the OTT world title on the line, Trent Seven defends and retains over Trevor Lee. Says that match was about 14 minutes long. You know, I bet that was a really damn good match. As I mentioned, Trevor Lee has been getting massive reactions since, you know, leaving the WWE. And Trent Seven, everywhere he works, whether it's in the WWE system, you know, whatever brand, you know, NXT UK, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, whatever, he always found a place, in my opinion, to kind of carve for himself. He always had a different look. He's got a good move set. And then, you know, in TNA, I think same kind of thing. Him and Speedball, I think, have been a good team. And I think Trent Seven just kind of works everywhere he's at. And especially, you know, in the UK, he's always going to be over big. So I bet this was a really damn good match, too. And probably a big reaction for both guys, I'd imagine. And the main event of the show, we had Nick Nemeth over a man like Darius. Says that match was like 27 minutes long. That match probably rules. Man like Darius, if y'all haven't seen him, I mean, we obviously talk about him on the weekend or often, but he's one of the next up as far as breakout stars on probably some sort of mainstream company, you know, probably pretty soon. I mean, getting a lot of buzz right now. And the more he has matches with super high profile talents like Nemeth, the faster that stuff's going to happen for him. And I bet Nemeth also benefited from being in there with Darius, because there's so much Darius can do too to make Nemeth look even better than Nemeth already is. You know what I mean? So I'd imagine that match was an absolute banger. So I'm really looking forward to when these air. And I do not know the platform they're going to be on. I have not looked into that yet. I just have the results in front of me. But keep a lookout for when OTT drops, because based on the first set of results here, it looks like a pretty damn good card. And then the second set of results, this was from the next day. So this was on August 10th. This is from Dublin, Ireland, and the National Stadium. Show started off with a six-man tag match where the Lads from the Flats, the team of Liamo, Martin, and Worky, they defeat BDE, the team of Big Dad, Dirty Nicky, Bittersweet Josh, and JB. We have the money match where Mike Bailey defeats Robbie X. So a lot of stuff going on between Robbie X and Mike Bailey, between teaming and wrestling one another in these 2 days. But, you know, can't get enough Speedball Mike Bailey, you know what I mean? After that, we had the OTT gender-neutral title match where Golden Boy Santos defeats Dan Barry, Ilya Zarkov, who was the champion going in, and Man Like Darius to become the new champion. We had the OTT No Limits title on the line. Danhausen defeats Renzo Rose to become the new champion. We had Nick Nemeth over LJ Cleary. The OTT tag team titles on the line. The Social Elite, the team of Matthew Smith and Sean Guinness, defend and retain over the Freshness, the team of Fabio and Martin Shears. We had Jay Money on the outside with them. After that, we have an 8-person tag team match where Angel Cruz, Be Cool, Joe Cabray, and Justy defeat The Draw, the team of Adam Maxted, Charlie Sterling, Jay, and Sammy D. And the main event of the second show is the OTT World Championship. Be Cool defeats Trent Seven to become the new OTT World Champion. So, huge title change there. And even huger news coming out of this Ireland show was that JD McDonagh and Finn Balor are going to be going to OTT for their 10th anniversary show October 26th. So that's coming up soon. And that is humongous. JD McDonagh is a former OTT world champion. He was a big part of that company before signing with the WWE. So, you know, big stuff happening for OTT. Not only are they getting JD McDonagh back for an appearance, they're also getting Finn Balor, who, you know, I don't know where Finn Balor would rank specifically on like the best Irish wrestlers of all time as far as like most well-known and stuff, but he's got to be way up there, right? Way up there. There's some, obviously some major female names from there too, but as far as like on the male side, I think Finn Balor's got to be like way, way, way up there, right? There's some others I can name. I don't want to like get a list going here and like, you know, start ranking Irish wrestlers, but you know, that's just humongous for OTT to be getting Finn Balor. And then considering what Jaden McDonagh means to the company, that's just super cool that both guys get to come back. And hopefully by, you know, by the time that show rolls around, they'll still be the tag team champions and they can bring their title belts, you know, to the show. Because I know when I go to these live events and indie shows and stuff like that, one of the things that I think is the coolest, honestly, and this is going to make me sound like a giant mark, but one of my favorite things is, if there's a champion there, especially a champion from like maybe a bigger company that is like, let's say in this instance, it'd be them bringing the tag team titles. But, you know, I went to a Glory Pro show once where Cody Rhodes brought the ROH world title. I've seen, you know, plenty of shows where, you know, like Mustafa Ali recently brought the X Division title to Action Wrestling and stuff like that. It's just super cool as a fan that you can do like photo ops and stuff, or maybe they'll let you hold the title belt, or maybe, you know, you get to see it like up close in person, maybe take a picture with it or something. I think it's kind of an added, just like something that's really an added kind of cool benefit of going to indie shows that have bigger names involved, you know. It's like, that'd just be, I don't know, I think that'd be pretty badass, right? Like if you're going to this smaller indie show consistently, OTT, all of a sudden Finn Balor and Jaden McDonagh show up and they're holding WWE, like legitimate WWE title belts. And, you know, you can walk up and actually like hold one of those in your hands, or maybe put it on your shoulder, or like just see it up close in person, along with, of course, the wrestler themselves being right there in front of you. It's just a really cool experience as a fan. So very, very, very cool for OTT doing what they're doing right now. All right. Spoiler alert, spoiler alert. We are going to end today's show with Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers. I'm going to put the timestamp below. If you don't want Ring of Honor spoilers, thank you very much for listening to the show, and please hit the like button on FightfulSelect.com before you leave. And for everyone staying, these are Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers in 3, 2, 1. All right, these are spoilers from last night from Arlington, Texas. The date, for anyone who needs records of this, is from August 10th, 2024. And, of course, AEW ran Collision and it got Ring of Honor taken care of as well. These are results for matches that will be airing on future episodes of Ring of Honor Honor Club. And these are the results. We've got Abaddon over Jael. We have a six-person tag team match. The Spanish announced project, the team of Serpentico and Angelico, along with Fuego del Sol, defeat Ace of Space Academy, the team of Colton Charles and LSG, along with Joe Alonso. We got a six-person tag match for Top Flight, the team of Dante and Darius Martin, along with Action Andrade and Layla Gray on the outside, defeat CD Bennett, Dante Leon, and Vin Parker. We got Sammy Guevara over Arya Daivari, who had Mark Sterling in their corner. Mina Shirakawa over Rachel Ellering. Leo Rush over Rocky Romero. And then what looks like the main event of the tapings, we have the ROH World Six-Man titles on the line. Dustin Rhodes, along with the Von Erichs, the team of Marshall and Ross Von Erich, they take on the Cage of Agony, the team of Bishop Khan, Brian Cage, and Toa Leona. This is a no contest, so Dustin and the Von Erichs are still your ROH six-person world champions. But I do not know what caused the no contest, but they are still the champions nonetheless. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Before I get out of here, I just want to quickly say rest in peace to the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan. I'm going to be talking more about Kevin Sullivan on the Spotlight. That'll be one of my other topics over there. That'll be Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. But, you know, I'll repeat myself a little bit on Thursday, but Kevin Sullivan, when I started watching wrestling back in the early 90s, I was probably around 6 years old when I started really watching like on a weekly basis. And I was a WCW fan. I was from Atlanta, Georgia. And when I started watching wrestling, the biggest villain in the wrestling world, to me, was the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. He was the guy out there trying to take down Hulkamania. He teamed up with the Nature Boy and formed the alliance to try to take down Hulkamania. And obviously there was the Dungeon of Doom and the Three Faces of Fear. And I went back later on and found out about a lot of his work in Florida. And of course, there's all the lore there between him and Nancy Benoit and Chris and booking himself out of his marriage. And I mean, just wild, long career, a booker of WCW and all this stuff. And just, you know, but a guy who really meant a lot to me as a wrestling fan. You know, I know that a lot of that Dungeon of the Doom stuff, you know, that didn't hold up well over time. And if I wasn't a little kid when that was going on, I probably would not have thought it was very good. But because I was a little kid, I loved that stuff. And Kevin Sullivan was, like I said, the major villain of the show when I first started becoming a fan. So I've got his action figures. I've got an autograph of his, actually. Really cool story, though, on today's show on. But and I'll tell this again on the spotlight, so I apologize if you're hearing me tell about this twice. But I'll never forget, when I was a kid, this would have been like the late 90s. So back in like 1996 or 1997, probably 1997, was the first time I ever met a wrestler in person. I was in the Atlanta airport with my mom, my dad, and my brother. This is before cell phones. This is before people just had any cameras. They were just carrying around and stuff. And I spotted Kevin Nash in the Atlanta airport, and I was really nervous to meet him because he was such a bad guy on television. And my dad is 6'6". So, like, up to this point in my life, like, my dad's pretty much the biggest guy I really know or really been around. And we walked up to Kevin Nash because I pointed him out to my parents. I was like, hey, that's Kevin Nash. Like, you know, I was a huge, huge NWO and WCW fan. And I was massively into the video games and stuff. And I'll never forget, like, Kevin Nash was super cool to my family. And I remember he was the first guy that was like way bigger than my dad was. I was like, how I couldn't believe how big Kevin Nash was in person. And because of that experience, not long after, within a year or so, my dad was in Atlanta just doing business, and he happened to run into Kevin Nash again in Atlanta. I can't remember where, but he was just getting lunch somewhere. And because my dad recognized Kevin Nash from the airport, my dad walked up to him and was like, hey, would you mind signing an autograph for my son? You know, he's a big fan. We got to meet you at the airport and blah, blah, blah. And not only did Nash sign an autograph for my dad that I still have to this day, he asked my dad to sit down with him, and they wound up like having a lunch and like talking about like their jobs and stuff. It was really surreal hearing my dad tell me about this as a kid. But not only did that happen, my dad's sitting there with Kevin Nash eating lunch, and then the Macho Man Randy Savage comes and sits down with them, and then Kevin Sullivan sits down with them as well, and Mike Graham, who you might know of as well. But my dad only recognized Randy Savage, but he winds up getting all their autographs because he's like, my son loves wrestling, you know, he probably knows all you guys. So I still, to this day, it's one of my prized possessions. I still have all their autographs on just like random white paper. And there, it's all framed in my office here at my house or my apartment or whatever. And I'll just never forget that because it was so cool, because my dad wound up actually meeting the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. He said that everyone he sat down with that day was super nice. They were all really happy to hear that his son was a big fan and that I wanted their autographs. And my dad didn't even know who the Taskmaster was. So he gets home with his signature. And for years, I don't even know whose signature it is, because, you know, because we didn't have the technology and the signature was kind of scribbled. Years later, I started like really trying to decode, you know, whose signature was whose. I knew who the Macho Man was already because it was obvious. I knew who Kevin Nash was because it was obvious. Then I do my research and I realize the other ones are Mike Graham, who I knew of. And then the other one is the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan, my favorite villain from when I became a wrestling fan. So I just think that's really cool that Kevin Sullivan was nice to my dad. That means a lot. And, it means a lot to me that he was who he was in wrestling, you know, for better or worse. There's highs and lows in that guy's career and in his legacy. But as far as as far as for me as a kid, very influential in becoming a wrestling fan. So wanted to say rest in peace to the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan to end the show today. And as far as everything else that has to go on with me, Spotlight is on Thursday mornings, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Use code Fight Talk at independentwrestling.tv. Follow me on X @FightTalk_. Till next weekend, twist professional wrestling.